Secretary of Veterans Affairs, this year at 3:30.
May I please report, Jimmy Joy Brady, appearing on behalf of Mr. Jones. In this case, the question that we are asking the court to look at or examine is fairly narrow. And that is the question of what VA's obligation is under 3.158, subsection A, when it requests additional evidence from the veteran, and where the veteran's claimant fails to respond to that request, that claim is deemed abandoned within a year after a year. In this case, the court found that the phone call, that leaving a message for the veteran was sufficient. We're asking the court to look at that and determine that that is actually not sufficient, and that, in fact, when VA communicates a request for evidence to the veteran, that communication needs to be submitted to the veteran, and preferably in writing.
Did you say preferably, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Preferably in writing, or in writing, yes.
Well, I was going to ask if there was one phone message, and that was it. It appears sometimes message, sometimes messages in the briefs.
I actually was looking at that again this morning to try to determine what exactly the situation was, and I think that sort of the crux of the problem here is what gave rise to this whole question. And that's because it's not really clear whether a message was left with a person or whether a message was left at a phone number. It's not clear whose phone number that was. In this case, basically, from what I can tell from the record is that there was a message left at a number that the veteran needed to return his claim file.
Counsel, it sounds to me like you may be, if not shifting, at least softening the decision you took in your brief, because I understood your brief to argue it has to be in writing to notice. Now you're saying preferably.
Well, I think, yes.
What is your position?
Our position is that it should be in writing. And the position
that it has to be in writing.
That it should be in writing, yes.
Yeah, well, I'm
okay,
sure.
So that's
there are a lot of shoulds in the world. I can be doing a lot of other things that I'm doing. But besides putting that aside, what exactly now is your position on whether the regulation requires mandates of writing so that anything short of that is invalid?
Right. We've asked that it be in writing, and we asked that it be in writing as being consistent with the regulatory exception regime that requires other similar types of communications to be in writing. A veteran has to file a written application. VA has to give veteran notice of any decisions that may affect payment. It's not a decision.
A decision
it's not a request.
Saying, hey, you forgot to bring in your evidence, or you always miss that at the other thing. What is it you're saying?
I agree. What I'm saying is that the regulations support an interpretation that request needs to be in writing, must be in writing, in order to preserve the veteran's rights. If that request is not communicated, and writing ensures that VA has complied with its obligation to communicate that to the veteran, that request, if the veteran knows what it is that he needs to submit, or else his claim will be deemed abandoned. Because if the veteran, if that request is not given to the veteran, doesn't receive that request is not made adequately in writing to the veteran, then that affects the payment of benefits, and which is what is discussed or what is referred to in 3.103F, I believe.
Well, I gather you think that we really can't consider the passage of 9 years as opposed to some other period of time before the veteran raised the question of what happened to my claim.
I don't understand.
I'm really trying to understand whether this is an absolute rule. If it's not in writing, too bad. It doesn't matter how much time has passed, 9 years or 20 years or whatever, there's no obligation on the veteran to raise the question of whatever the question might have been. Whether the question is, did you need additional information, and we're going to decide my claim, or whatever.
The obligation at this point we're saying is that it's on VA to make a request. But if VA determines that additional evidence is necessary, then they need to submit that request to the veteran in writing. At that point, the time starts running for that year in which if the veteran does not respond within a year, then the claim is deemed abandoned. If that request isn't made, then that claim remains pending and unadjudicated for all that time. If VA needs that evidence but doesn't adequately and doesn't submit that request to the veteran, then yes, it remains pending for 9 years, 10 years, however long. But the ball is in VA court at that point.
What
is their obligation to make the decision?
On the facts of this case, and looking at the board's finding at JA-12, that the veteran, according to the board, refused to provide a forwarding address after indicating he was leaving the country. So presumably, the option of sending something in writing would have been more hopeless than making a telephone call or a series of telephone calls. The court refers to them as calls. What's the VA supposed to do in that situation?
Well, we would submit that there was a last known address on the record at that time, which appears to be his sister's address. And that
so even though he's saying, you can't reach me by name, okay, I'm leaving the country, they should go through the, at least according to him, rootless step of sending out something in writing. Well, suppose there is no address. Let's take care of the sister out of the picture and say, you know, they say, well, give us your address and we'll send you any further correspondence. And he says, no, call me this number. I don't have a fixed address. Worst case, I'm homeless.
And in that, I think we'll be, again, assessing this position to a certain degree. Because I think that, you know, if we're looking at all possible situations like that, I would say that in that situation, there at least needs to be something in writing or sort of contact or something that shows that their request was communicated to the veteran, that the veteran understood that there was some kind of communication or contact made.
So if they try to reach him by letter and by phone, but as far as they're concerned, as far as they can tell, neither reaches him, then the case stays open?
Yes.
So what you're saying is that they not only have to send him notice, but the notice has to be received by him, I think.
Actually, I apologize. What I would say is, and looking at the Irwin case, which is a CABC decision, in Irwin v. Kentucky, which is 23 at 128, and in that case, the question was whether it was a timely notice of appeal issue. And the statute that they looked at, and that was 7104E1, which talks about BPA decisions and what is required to give a veteran notice of a BPA decision. And that statute specifically says it needs to be sent to the last known address of the veteran. And so that is another, at that point, the VA can show, and in that case they looked at, it was sent to the last known address, it was not returned undeliverable by the post office, and at that point the presumption of regularity attaches, the VA gets that presumption. And so actually what I'm saying is, if they send it to the last known address, they've shown that in writing, they can show that they have submitted that request to the veteran, directly to the veteran at his last known address. They have made every effort in that situation to communicate that request to the veteran.
And even if he's been home for 20 years, what they should do is pick up the 20-year-old address. No, that can't be right?
If that's the last known address.
But wouldn't that be putting
an undue burden on him?
It's not just a burden, but it would be a kind of silly process to go through. Right? They know perfectly well he's no longer at that address. Let's say that address was his military address, and he's been out of the military for 20 years.
Well, and I guess an alternative is what I would ask the court to consider is the possibility that the VA needs to make every effort.
I don't know if they have an old address that they know is an old address. It's an old address. But they have a current phone number. So they send a written notice to the old address. Is that good?
I would say so, but it isn't returned and deliverable. And if they can show that that was the best that they can do.
Even if they have a current phone number.
If they have a current phone number. Then I would say, and like in this case, they could have called and tried to obtain a current address for him from that phone number. I mean, they did have a phone number.
They did call, didn't they?
Yes, I don't know what exactly happened. That phone number, we can't tell. I mean, that's.
We have to go by.
There's no indication that the veteran even received that request. And that, I think, is really the problem that we are here with and protecting. What VA has to do in a situation to make sure that the veteran receives the request.
With what the veteran did or didn't do, file, you don't file.
VA, they can move files.
And you walk off.
Presumably, that is the VA position.
I've never, well, I mean, do you have evidence to the contrary?
I don't have evidence either way.
Well, he took that position, he turned it in as he walked out.
Yeah, he says that he did not leave with it. And that also presumes that he knows that if he takes his fee files, that will make it impossible for VA to make a decision, that he understands the consequences of taking that file with him, assuming that he even took the file. It's unclear what happens to the file.
Well, you know, perhaps on my look at this more sympathetically, if he weren't receiving benefits. So the real question is he entitled to benefits for those retroactive 9 years of service?
Yes. In fact, the exam that he had the day that he went to VA was a favorable exam and said that, in fact, he had a mental illness that originated during service. So he was eventually, once he did come back and file again in 2002, he was awarded. The question is whether or not he should get it retroactively back to his initial claim.
Did you establish mental illness?
Yes. Yes, the VA examination at the time in January of 1995 established that he was suffering from mental illness that was related to service. So he was entitled to benefits.
But that is if he didn't abandon that earlier.
Yes, that is if VA adequately complied with his obligation to request additional evidence.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court, at issue in this case is the Department of Veterans Affairs' common sense practice of developing claims with the cooperation of the veteran by requesting evidence by telephone, not solely by mail. There are no statutory or regulatory provisions that require that VA request evidence in writing. And in fact, telephone communications allow a more efficient and personalized development of the claim.
There's one thing that struck me a little odd about this. I mean, normally, requesting additional evidence means we need for you to come in for an examination, or we need your medical records, or we need for you. Well, this is. We need the file back. I mean, that's not really, I guess the file contains evidence, but that's not really quite spot on to what you normally think of as a request for additional evidence. Do you think that this regulation applies at all?
Well, yes, Your Honor, it was evidence involves medical records, whether of the federal sort or of private records, and the request was. Maybe Mr. Jones for something within his possession. The VA directive from that time period states that a telephone communication or fax communication may be the preferable way to obtain medical records. The 38 CFR 3.158A simply states that if the VA requests evidence and the veteran does not respond within 1 year, VA will consider the veteran to have abandoned the claim. In essence, he's telling VA, I don't want to pursue the claim anymore. And the Veterans Court, therefore, correctly interpreted.
Well, he's assumed to tell VA that, but that assumption will apply whether he responds or not, or for that matter, whether he receives the communication or not, whether it's in writing or not. I mean, it's an assumed abandonment.
Correct, Your Honor. The fact that VA could not adjudicate his claim without the records that were located in that claim file that was taken. Mr. Jones' counsel stated that it's not clear what happened to the claims file, but the Veterans Court made a finding that the veteran took the file, and that the court does not have jurisdiction to review the factual findings of the Veterans Court. Mr. Jones provided an address, and this is on page 1251 of the appendix attached to Mr. Jones' brief, provided an address and phone number, and that was the phone number called. He described that he would be at that address through January 24th, and they called on January 20th, following the January 19th medical examination. Section 3.158.
And the, I think the facts were that he had said he would, after that date, he would be out of country. Unreachable, is that address?
Correct, Your Honor. And what he had informed VA after the January 19th medical examination was that he would no longer be at that address, leaving the country, and refused to provide a forwarding address. The phone call to simply a more efficient, practical way to request evidence and develop a claim. There could be numerous requests back and forth with development over the phone through a personalized communication to send a piece of mail each time one of those requests for a bit of evidence needs to be made would be burdensome and not efficient for the veterans. In fact, this court in Paralyzed Veterans of America, the Secretary of Veterans Affairs stated that in a survey, veterans had responded that they preferred a telephone communication and
let's assume he files a claim in 1993 and he goes in and they're still working on it, RRC. And he walks out, he's got the file. And let's assume the evidence is his way. He drops off the file and disappears. And then in 2002, he files a claim again and is given, they gave him, I think, 100% disability. On just those facts, what's the status of the 1993 claim?
Left the file, if he had left the file?
Yes, he left the file, or he was never given the file. He just walked out after the meeting with the RO folks and is not seen again until 2002. What's the status of his 93 claim?
Mr. Jones, it would still be abandoned. He still would have abandoned his claim because he failed to respond to the telephonic request for evidence.
Let's assume no telephonic request, no nothing. Nobody talks to anybody. He walked out in 1993 and isn't seen or heard again until 2002. Now what?
If there was no request for evidence under 3.158A,
right,
then presumably it would be open. There would still be the ability to get an effective date.
So it stays open regardless of how many years go by that the veteran doesn't make any effort to pursue the claim.
Well, the veteran does have a responsibility to pursue the claim, but in that case, 3.158A, an issue here, would not apply to create abandonment. One point that Mr. Jones has made in his brief is...
In the absence of affirmative abandonment, the claim stays open forever.
That appears to be the case, Your Honor.
Do you understand?
As I...
Okay.
In Section 358A, there's no language requiring that the request be in writing. In fact, a section that Mr. Jones replied referred a great deal to in his brief was Section 38 CFR 3.103. That section does require a writing for a final decision. The fact that that inclusion of the in writing language was in that section shows that VA acted intentionally and purposefully in its disparate exclusion of the in-writing requirement from 3.158. Again, in Paralyzed Veterans of America, the court stated that when a statute was silent as a form of notification, VA should retain flexibility to determine whether oral notice was the preferable way to provide this notice. That showed deference to the VA's experience in this matter and the reliability of modern technology. VA's directive also shows that VA has begun encouraging phone use, and that's its interpretation of its own regulation, which is entitled to deference. Mr. Jones referred a great deal in his brief to 38 CFR 3.103 and 38 U.S.C. 5103. But these sections are relevant to the issue of abandonment. by a failure to respond to a request for evidence. 3.103 is about written notice of decisions, which are further along in the claims process. And when a claim is abandoned, as it was here, there is no decision.
There is this is a question that goes to the underlying facts, which is probably outside of our competence to address, but I'm still curious to know whether the facts, to the extent that they show. The court refers to unreturned phone calls. What's the evidence as to the call or calls?
But, Your Honor, a call was made on January 20th, 1995, the day after the medical examination. And it appears that, and that's from the report of the report of contact, which is at JA 1238, that a message was left. I believe the court, when it refers to multiple calls, is looking at a different report of contact that's dated in October of 1995, but, and that's at JA 1274. That appears to actually be a call within the Department of Veterans Affairs.
So the record, that's fine.
But nevertheless, a single request for evidence is sufficient to make a request for evidence.
What's your reaction to the suggestion that Bryson made some while back in this discussion that the relevant call, was never really a request for evidence necessary to complete the application, I'm quoting from 38 CFR 3.109A, because it was the application presumably was complete, he just walked off with the file. So when the phone call went in, he was not notified of evidence necessary to complete the application, therefore no phone call relevant to this case was ever made, and therefore, according to your earlier answer, this thing is still open.
There, there's a distinction between an application and a claim in this case, but the evidence that's discussed could be evidence of any kind. It could be any medical exam, report of any kind, and therefore, the fact that this evidence was actually produced at the VA medical office did not make it in any way different from any other request for medical evidence. In fact, sometimes those requests for evidence are for military records, which we presume would have been perhaps in that file as well, but maybe the veteran has those and VA did not. And so they may ask for their own records.
You're suggesting whatever was in that file is evidence relevant to the completion of the claim?
Certainly, Your Honor, because those were his recent examinations that were necessary for VA to determine whether he was entitled to any compensation. Without them, it had no doctor's examinations to rely upon. Also, Mr. Jones refers to 38 U.S.C. 5103A as requiring written notice in this type of situation. Our writ has no reference to written notice at all, and it actually only deals with an application for benefits. That would be earlier in the process than the, at that time, the veteran had to establish a well-rounded claim, and then VA would move into assisting him with developing the facts. So the section in 5103 referred to an earlier stage in the proceeding. Nevertheless, there is no reference to written notice, and the only reference to a mailing address in 5103C, as we pointed out in our brief, it only states that benefits cannot be denied due to the lack of a mailing address, which has been interpreted by commenters to refer to the problem of homelessness. Benefits may not be denied, but that has nothing to do with the issue of whether requests for evidence should be made by phone or to a mailing address. Through throughout Mr. Jones' brief, he seemed to be making an argument that 38 CFR 3.103 and 38 U.S.C. 5013 actually themselves contain themselves contain a requirement that they request for evidence to be in writing. There's nothing about a request for evidence either, and that was not raised below for the Veterans Court. The court should not review it as the Veterans waived this issue, and the court would lack jurisdiction if the proposed interpretation was not considered by the Veterans Court of those of that regulation and statute. Further, the Veterans' reply brief notes that he seems to argue that a point raised in a motion for reconsideration may be timely and may be preserved for appeal. However, the court's decisions explained in our initial brief demonstrate that that is not the case.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. I just have a quick comment on the whole question of the fact that obviously the regulation does not specifically require writing, but this is a notice issue because ultimately once that request is made, then the veteran is put on notice that additional evidence is needed or some action is required on his part or else the claim will be deemed abandoned. A year later, then it becomes final and he loses any benefits during that period of time until a subsequent claim is filed. But we would argue, understanding the need for flexibility, obviously, in particularly in the arena of disabled veterans, and the fact that many veterans do not necessarily have addresses, but that we would assert that oral notice is not sufficient unless there is perhaps no other way to notify the veteran of this request. And there is at least something in the record that shows, or VA can show, that that request was communicated to the veteran and that the veteran did receive actual notice. This is why we would ask the court to require notice, and that the written notice, that that request needs to be in writing to at least preserve or ensure that that notice is satisfied, that the veteran gets that notice, that VA does everything it can to preserve the notice and preserve that for the veteran. And obviously, 5102 and 5103, 3.103, Secretary is correct that those do not specifically pertain to a request, but those pertain to decisions in different stages in the adjudication process.
If the 93 application were still open, would your client automatically get backdated on your disability claim?
Yes, assuming that there was no abandonment issue. Assuming that, as in the scenario that you provided earlier where there was no request made for additional evidence or for the claim file, and he simply went to the examination, and then at that point it would be left for VA to make a decision, and it would remain open as long as it took VA to make a decision.
Now, there's some of these cases that come up where VA just dropped the ball in 1949, and somebody comes in later and says, where's my answer?
That's correct. That's
how that came. Years worth of
So if they had written to him after he didn't answer the telephone, and the letter comes back not at this address, then it would stay open, is that right? Because there would have been no
limit
on whether they wrote or didn't write. Perhaps it's their own.
Perhaps, although at the same time, it really serves VA to provide that written notice. And that way, it's more efficient. Send the notice, they've preserved their obligation in that situation, and we have uncertainty with respect to the system and things that would not necessarily. But if it did come back indeliverable, then absolutely we have no indication that the request was actually communicated to the veteran, but we do have an indication that VA made every effort to communicate that request. So, and in that situation, I don't know factually what would happen. I mean, obviously these are different factual scenarios that would be left to the lower court.
Texting on the iPhone wouldn't do it.
remains to be